This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
Butch Thompson grew up in Amory, Mississippi. Well, 10 miles outside Amory. His front yard turned into a baseball or a football field, depending on the season. Originally, Auburn's head baseball coach went to junior college to play football. He walked on to the baseball team. But by the time he was done in junior college, his path in baseball was set. Thompson went on to play at Birmingham Southern for his mentor, Brian Shoup, who later gave him his first break as a coach. That included four trips to the NAIA World Series and a national championship. Butch was an assistant at Georgia, Auburn, and Mississippi State, going to the College World Series with both Bulldog teams. It took him 4 years as Auburn's head coach to take the Tigers back to Omaha. With the college baseball season on the horizon, Butch Thompson's journey to become Auburn's head baseball coach is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Tigers podcast. Today, we talk things over with Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson. As we record this, still waiting on a schedule to come down from the Southeastern Conference, but I thought we'd spend just a little bit of time talking with you today, Coach. Just want to talk a little bit about your career, the point that had brought you to Auburn right now. So, well, let's start at the beginning. What was Butch Thompson's childhood like in the state of Mississippi?
Well, you know, I'm from Amory, Mississippi, A-M-O-R-Y, but it's pronounced Amory. And that is packaged in a Bermuda Triangle, I guess, with Oxford, Starkville, and Tuscaloosa all about, you know, 50 minutes, an hour, hour and a half. And there in Amory, I actually lived about 10 miles out of town, mom, dad, and I wound up having I have one younger brother. So we lived out in the boondocks, I guess you could say. And we lived on Coontail Road. So a lot of the banquets and stuff that I speak at, and when I'm really trying to ham it up, I say I'm from Coontail, Mississippi. It just seems to add a little flavor to the story. But, you know, we lived on 20 acres, small home. My dad, my grandfather built that home. We moved in there when I was about five or six, across the street, because the first 5 years of my life, we lived on our grandparents' land right out beside them in our single-wide trailer. Mm-hmm. And they built that house for 3 or 4 years, and then we moved into there, and that's still the home place. I lost my dad a couple of years ago. First Father's Day was our game in 19 against Mississippi State there in Omaha. Wish he could have seen that, been a part of that ride with us. That's where I'm from, always be from. My mom's now living back at our home place there, and I have a brother that works at the North Mississippi Medical Center, so he's in this medical industry with all this COVID going on. So he's there, and he's kind of the caretaker and watches over my mom, and they live close together near Amory, Mississippi.
When did athletics become an important part in your life?
It was always a little bit out of balance. My dad loved sports, and my dad worked the shift work. So he got a GED, wasn't a college grad, and so he worked at the best job in the county there, just worked at the chemical plant, but it was 12-hour shifts, and we just loved ball. I mean, he would work a 12-hour shift, come home, and if there was daylight or if the night light had already come on, we would be out playing something, depending on what season it was. And, of course, we only had the three channels at that time. I remember Bjorn Borg, McEnroe, and Jimmy Connors. I remember having the wooden tennis racket and hitting it off the back of the brick wall that week of Wimbledon. But if it was basketball season, we were, you know, my dad, he loved the Celtics. He loved Dennis Johnson, and Larry Bird just hung the moon. And when we'd watch, you know, when it was baseball season, he would set up the front yard and walk off the bases. And then football season, he had planted cedar trees all about a 50-yard football field, but it was in cedar trees. So he had the vision to make an end zone 10 yards apart with cedar trees. And then, you know, he would put it every 10 yards. So we had cedars. Our front yard was more mapped off for a 50-yard football field than anything else. And we just played and played and played. And now, mind you, there were hundreds, thousands of acres all around us with very few neighbors. But everybody within shouting distance or car horn distance would come to our house on the weekends. And my dad would quarterback for both teams. He would just, he would run everything. He was kind of the administrator of all of our games, but every kid in the area would come by. They knew to come to our house. The one thing that was lacking that I actually picked up in the coronavirus was fishing. I've been fishing a little bit these last 9 months just to, you know, find something to compete with, learn how to tie a hook. But I had all that stuff available to me all around me, the hunting, the fishing, everything outdoors, and I never partake. I never was part of anything until, I guess, you know, these last couple of years where I've started like, man, I've missed out on all that because I've just been playing ball. So it's been good to catch up on some of that. But I was driven just to play ball, and my dad was right there along with me. And he was hard. He was a pusher. He was a definite pusher and a grinder. And, you know, me and my brother really never, ever did good enough. You know, it was never acceptable. But at the same time, I wouldn't change a thing, because what he did do, looking back in hindsight, is he gave me a huge bucket of time. He invested in me every day, when he was tired, when he was away, when he was there. If I ever said I wanted to play, and no matter how he felt, he always popped up and did it. So I look back, you know, in a weird way, really fond of or realize the investment that he made in me.
What impression did that have on you as a coach, as a father, as a mentor, becoming an adult then, Coach?
I think it's like anything. You take the good and the bad. You know, I was in preparing to talk to you, and I've been listening to a lot of these Talking Tigers. I mean, I feel special today. I get to be on Talking Tigers with you, with all these people that you've been talking to. But I just think you're looking at both sides of the ledger. You're looking at the pros, the things that you thought he did a really good job with, and the cons. You know, it's the – I've been telling a story a lot with our father-son camp, and when I get a chance where I have young people with coaches, I tell them the Dairy Cream story, to where if I got a bunch of hits or if I pitched good, we'd go to Dairy Cream and I could get the banana split and I'd get everything on it. And then downtown Amory, when I went 0-for-4, because I believe from the ages of 12 to 15, I didn't know my name was Butch. I thought it was Ofer. Because every time I'd go 0-for-2 or 0-for-3, he would call me Ofer until I got, you know, to another game where I could redeem myself. But on those days, or when I didn't pitch as good, we would still go to that same Dairy Cream, and he would circle it, and he would say, hey, boy, I bet you'd like to have some of that ice cream. We would never stop. We would just circle it a couple of times as he was making points about the game and what I could do better. And instead of stopping, he would go that speed in his truck where his foot wasn't on the gas or the brake, that real slow speed, as he was just giving me all the breakdown of the game and everything that I missed. And, of course, we didn't stop. We would go on home, and we'd practice for another hour or so in the backyard for the sake of progress or getting better. So I take the pros and cons. And I know when I took the job at Auburn the day before, when I asked his blessing to, he was in a nursing home at that time, when I asked his blessing that, you know, I think Auburn's crazy enough, they're going to let me have the baseball job there. Are you okay with us moving to Auburn, Alabama? He was like, proud of you. You love them boys with all your heart. And that's all you got to do, because he was still picking at me. He was like, you got no shot. I mean, you got Vanderbilt and you got LSU and you got Florida. They're going to cream you. But then he come back and said, you'll win. You'll make a difference if you'll just love them. If you'll just love everybody that you interact with and be good to people and love those players and let the chips fall where they may. And as I was walking out of the room, he called me back in one more time. And he's like, I'm sorry. I said, what are you sorry for? And at the time, you got to remember, the Dairy Cream instances when I was 12 to 15 was like 35 years ago. And he said, I'm sorry for Dairy Cream. And I said, man, I wouldn't change a thing. I appreciate you. So I think in a weird way, he told me to love him, which is probably, you know, even when I look at, you know, my Bible, I just like, if I can just figure out that commandment, I win. And then some of the parenting things where he said, I'm sorry, or don't do that, but do this. One of our last few times, he eventually lost his ability to speak soon after that, as soon as we got to Auburn. One of the last conversations we had, he left me with some of the best advice, prophetic statement that I've ever had in my career. So I thank him for that. I thank him for the good, the bad, and everywhere in between, because I know he cared.
Butch, were you the first in your family to go to college?
Yep. First to get a degree. My grandparents, both sides. My mom was in foster care, so her family unit fell apart pretty quick. She had a pair of twins that were 8 years old that drowned right in front of the family, and one trying to help the other. And that family unit disintegrated instantly, basically. My mom wound up going into foster care, and then some great people at Mississippi State, husband and wife, a professor and his wife, took my mom in during high school. My mom and I are now best friends because I just turned 50 and my mom just turned 68. She found my dad. They found each other really early. And I think, you know, life with him was more exciting than maybe, you know, foster care the next few years. So got married real young, had me really young. So we all kind of raised each other in some regards. So neither side of my grandparents, mom and dad, both, I think they got the GEDs. My mom still works. She's a seamstress and she teaches people how to sew now. And my dad was just that shift work at the chemical plant. And so they busted their tail for me. They helped me to go to Birmingham Southern College, which is a magnificent school. Couldn't afford it at the time. I could see the value of their vehicles go down. They were trading down. They were doing everything in their power to see me have success and give me opportunity, and got me through there. So I, you know, my degree was kind of shared with the entire Thompson family for sure.
Why Birmingham Southern? What led you to Birmingham Southern? And when did you know that it was going to be baseball and not football? Because I know football was important to you.
Dose of reality. I actually signed a football scholarship out of high school to Itawamba Community College up in Fulton, Mississippi, where I eventually wound up playing my first 2 years of baseball. Walked on in baseball because, you know, I figured out pretty quick in football that, you know, I come out of high school at 175, even though I'm still a stealthy 235 today. I was much, much lighter coming out of high school. And I just felt like the football route kind of hit me after I graduated. You know, this day and time, we're talking to freshmen in high school, sophomores in high school, trying to get them to commit to come play Auburn baseball. Where I was from when I came through, graduated in 1988 from high school, to date myself, I finished my high school year, and then I thought about where I was going to go and what I was going to do. It wasn't all this early recruiting the way, you know, the world is transformed to now. And I played Legion baseball for the Tupelo 49ers after my senior year. I thought I was done with baseball, and I really started focusing on football and getting ready. And then, you know, just that realization how much fun that last summer of baseball was before school started, I kind of renegotiated. And I just honestly, I felt like in football, I was going to be the end guard and tackle. I was going to sit on the end of the bench, guard the water, and tackled anybody that got near it. And I thought, hey, I'm at least left-handed in baseball. So I thought the football deal was, you know, if you'll put on like 50 or 60 pounds and move to nose guard or something, you know, that might be your deal. And I never gave them a chance to have that talk with me. And we had so much fun. We won like the state or whatever. American Legion Baseball used to be big. It's not what it is now with all right. The travel ball, but I had a great experience. 4 or 5 of my teammates were going to play baseball, so I ended up actually walking onto the baseball team, playing for another great mentor, Roy Cressup, who was there for 25 years. And I guess the rest is history. And then my mentor, Brian Shoup, was coaching at Mississippi State at the time, recruiting me a little bit. At the time, the legend Ron Polk was at Mississippi State, and you know, I'm still a marginal college baseball player. And my choices were, when Brian Shoup left Mississippi State and got the head job at Birmingham Southern, there was a place for a new coach, an opportunity to play, because I wanted to play. I didn't want to sit. I didn't know much about the school. It was a total baseball decision. When 98% of the people go to Birmingham Southern are going for that great education, I was going to play ball. And I thought that was a better route than maybe walking on at Mississippi State with 65 other guys and getting lost in the shuffle because of a self-evaluation of my skills. And I thought Coach Shoup was a great man. I wound up being right and somebody that's still connected to me today. So I chose Birmingham Southern because I wanted to play ball, and it was a level of play that fit where I could be a contributor or I could help out, and had a wonderful experience.
In listening to you talk about Coach Shoup, your time there as a player, and then your time to start as a coach, that time at Birmingham Southern was a transformative point in your life and your career. Would you agree?
100%. I always knew I wanted to coach. That weird time going through high school, my senior year, I'd signed football scholarship, I guess December, I guess the semester right before I graduated. So I started training, lifting, and, you know, put the baseball down, and didn't play my senior year of high school. Felt like I had such a gap to catch up to be successful in football before I played that summer of Legion ball that was so much fun. That spring I wound up while I was training and lifting, I was like a student coach. My junior year, after coaching or playing with Birmingham Southern and Coach Shoup, as opposed to going off to the Cape League or whatever the summer collegiate leagues are to play baseball, I came back to Amory and started our junior American Legion team and was the head coach of that after my junior year in college. I always had the coaching bug. Always felt like that was my path out, was to be a coach. And I think Coach Shoup saw something there with that. Like, he's not going to play. He's going to coach in the summer. And just kind of took me under his wing. Him and Brenda helped pay for my master's, because once I got through Birmingham Southern, my dad was about to have to, you know, he traded down so far, as just an example. He was about to, you know, get a bicycle, I guess, to get back and forth on. So Coach Shoup, amazing wife Brenda, they started picking up the tab and helping me through my master's there at UAB, got me in the coaching career. And just every step of the way, just he's had my back, and so many people have, you know, that's a whole other podcast, but, you know, he blessed me. And then my faith, you know, September the 5th, 1992, I think when I was 11 or 12, you know, I'd been baptized and been told what to, you know, what to pray and think. September the 5th, 1992 was me getting on my knees and asking for forgiveness and asking for Christ to come in my heart for eternity. And, it was real. That was my connection and me running my own show. And Scott Mitchell was a great baseball player at Mississippi State. And he was a student assistant at Birmingham Southern at the time. And Coach Shoup planted all these seeds with us as players, where he'd teach us the game, but also teach us how to be men, and would always pass on a great example. And so I knew on that date that I was ready for that decision. So I not only learned baseball, I not only met a great couple that invested in me and helped me start my coaching career and helped me get my master's, I also, you know, helped me secure my faith for me personally. And so I can't think of a better experience or a better path than what I took as far as college.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama. When did you meet Robin?
After I graduated from Birmingham Southern, we both went there for 2 years, and she tries to blame that I had a steady other, significant other. I try to say that she had she was a Southern star, so I'd see her at the basketball games. You know, they would dance at halftime just like we have here, and so much respect to all those people. She loved being a Southern star, and I think we knew each other because you start talking about Birmingham Southern, you're talking about 1,500, 1,800 students, so everybody knows everybody because it's so small, but we never made a connection. I give the credit to Rick Fitzpatrick, and his wife at the time was Mary Ann. And Mary Ann was Robin's friend, and Rick was my third baseman. He was like, "Hey, let's go on a blind date with this girl." And that happened to be Robin. And it was a very short courtship. I fell in love with her. And, you know, we just celebrated 26 years, working on 27 now. And she's been a rock. She's been amazing. And, you know, we got strike one, strike two, and strike three, these girls that have been amazing. And shout out to Anna. Strike one just graduated from Auburn. I got to see that on December the 12th. And Strike two, Olivia will graduate this spring from Auburn University. So I can't tell you how fired up we are. And then strike three, still kicking a soccer ball over here at Auburn High School. So we'll see what she's up to here the next few years.
All right. What is the route then to becoming the head coach at Auburn? Because whether it's Birmingham Southern, whether it's Georgia, whether it's Mississippi State, every place you were as an assistant coach, there was great success and you were making it to the highest level. You were making it to that World Series. So kind of take us through that route to becoming the head coach at Auburn.
Yeah. Just, you know, once I got started at Birmingham Southern, it's 2 or 3 years. I'm like the, I don't know how much of an impact I was making on the team, but I was washing the clothes nicely. I was getting all the stains out, mowing the grass. I remember games starting, and I would wait till the top half of the first inning was over before I'd go put my baseball pants on. I would have my field clothes on. This is small college baseball, so yeah. It just got it lined off. I just got it set for the game. I'm not even fully dressed yet. I probably have a hoodie on like this with my jersey on underneath, but I didn't want to get my pants dirty, so I'd have like some wind pants on. We'd get out of that top half of the first inning. So when you're the pitching coach, you know, I got to call pitches the top half of the first. We get out of the top half of the first. I would run in as we come to bat, and then I would put my game pants on. I'd come back out for the top of the second. So that's why it's a good, humble place to start, you know. It didn't get lined off, and if that field wouldn't set just right, you know, it was nobody's fault but mine. So that's how I start many a games in that top half of the first, calling pitches, not even in full uniform yet. But we did. We had success. We went to 4 World Series in a row. I went away for a year to Jeff State Junior College. Coach Shoup thought that was a part. He wanted me to lead for a year. When I did that, then, you know, we were successful there in that 1 year. And probably would have stayed longer, but Coach Schoenrock, who was the pitching coach at the time, left and went to Kentucky with the legendary Keith Madison, who did our banquet a couple of years ago. Great man. When Coach Schoenrock left, then Coach Shoup gave me the opportunity to come back in kind of that elevated position. So I went from number 2, or the bottom, to number 1. There was only 2 slots at the time at Birmingham Southern, and we had that run of 4 World Series. And then there was something magical about 2001 when we knocked the door down and won that national championship. And the year before, there was an opportunity to get in the Southeastern Conference. We stayed. We just started a young family with Anna and Olivia. And after we won that national championship, there was an opportunity the next year to go to Georgia, and it seemed right. And so I started when David Perno started his career as the head coach at Georgia for 4 years. And again, I think year 3, we wound up making it to Omaha, the 2004 College World Series, and special ride. Auburn State, Alabama's always been dear because of that Birmingham Southern and that decade, basically, that we spent. We came to Auburn, thankful. Tom Slater gave us the opportunity to come to Auburn. 3 years here, and then those 7.5 at Mississippi State. And, you know, at the time, until 2019, it's like, anywhere I've been for over a year, we've been to a College World Series except for being an assistant at Auburn. So Robbie and I in Starkville, we knew there was something to Auburn. I didn't know it was to be the head baseball coach per se. I knew that's what I, you know, the industry I was in, but we would just lay in bed at night like, there's still some pull to Auburn. We're going to wind up at Auburn. And, you know, I was on Tom Slater's staff when he was let go here at Auburn. And so it wasn't like fluffy and warm on the departure. Again, I think there was something bigger at work. I think like God, you know, was going to give us an opportunity to do something in Auburn. And in our little minds for Robin and I, when the opportunity came back to come to Auburn, it seemed like we're supposed to answer that calling. We felt that stirring in us for years that we're supposed to be here for something. And again, on this journey, you know, we just had our 5th anniversary here. It may be for Auburn baseball and it may be for something else. I still don't know, but we're serious about it. We're serious about the commitment. We're serious that we were supposed to be here. I hope it's to win a bunch of games. I hope it's to make a difference. I hope it's to be good to people. But for whatever that reason is, I still think we're trying to define and figure out what that is, but I don't think we're here by accident either.
You come to Auburn, and the first year, you know, is you're rebuilding a program. Year two, you're in Tallahassee, and within a pitch of winning a regional and coming home to host a super regional. And I think we all believe with that pitching staff, you're heading to Omaha. Year three, you win a regional and come within maybe a pitch of winning a super regional in Gainesville. And then in year four, you may have to win on the last day of the regular season to get in the NCAA tournament. I don't know how that is. I mean, and you have to come from behind to do that in Baton Rouge. Scheffler hits that ninth inning home run to tie it, and you guys win it in the extra innings. And so much happened in the next 3 weeks from Rod and Paula's passing to winning a regional in Atlanta to going to North Carolina and knocking down that door. Do you use that analogy quite a bit, knocking down that door and getting to Omaha? I mean, in a short amount of time, Coach, there have been some pretty special moments in the development of Auburn baseball with you and your staff here at Auburn.
And I'm so thankful that you've been with me on that ride every step of the way. It has not been for the faint of heart, but it has been for perseverance. It has been living, and it has been a step up. And when you step up and you're really trying to get in the mix at the highest level, I mean, it's, whew, I can't imagine. Or I listen to it. I probably listen to it. I'm probably down to once a week. I went for like months where every day I would play, you know, your replay and some of those captions of that first inning in North Carolina. That's one of the most amazing things I've ever been through. Stephen Williams getting to redeem himself at Georgia Tech to persevere for being in right field with our whole team after losing to Florida for that 1 year of perseverance, for him to have that magical swing in the ninth against Georgia Tech. There's been some highs. There's been some loss. We've had loss, not just on the field, but off the field. But we have persevered, and we have grown to a level, and we have continued to make it. It's been a blast. This has been living the last 5 years, and it started hard. You started with that first team where you come in on October the 22nd, and right around the corner you're starting a season with a group of players you've never been with before. You know, that was one of the hardest things I'd ever been through, because I was the leader, and it was just continuing to get punched and punched and punched. But there were some amazing men on that team that I want to thank, you know, those players. Blake Logan's still with me. You know, he's our director of player development, has done a great job. He's going to be an amazing coach. He was a leader, and he welcomed me and our staff. Anthony Greer had a tremendous year. Mm-hmm. Year. Jordan Ebert. I just those three guys, and there's more, but those three guys just stand out to me that I'll never forget. They made the difference in that team. They were my highlight in that first year as you're coming in trying to figure out where we're starting from, how to build a program. We can't get out of our own way. Where are we going? I'll never forget those three men from there. And then just each and every year, all these guys that committed and these families that chose Auburn baseball over all these other options, all these pitchers, before we get on that grass in Omaha, before an Auburn uniform runs out there. Man, I tip my hat forever for those people that have made that commitment. It's been player-driven. And then you see how our fans have hung in there and been on this amazing ups and downs and, you know, this Walt Disney ride with us, and it's continued to grow. And to get to that point, I remember somebody tapped me on the shoulder and like, there's a crowd. It's like a basketball crowd standing outside. It's like a football crowd. We've never had that. And I think it was George tapped me on the shoulder. Coach, you might ought to go out there and say hello to these folks. And I just remember going out and seeing our fans and seeing that growth. And then, of course, Corona hit. And we're in a stage of figuring it out right now. But we've had so many challenges. But we've persevered through some things. It's been amazing. Really, in this day and time, we need to be able to separate what's a challenge and what's a problem. you know, somebody's really sick, that's a problem. A loss of a job, a loved one. I mean, those are problems. What we have right now that we're going through most of the time are this little group of challenges, you know. I got a quarantine. I've been contact traced, or the lines are longer. I mean, those are challenges. Those need to be dealt with the right way. Those need to be met head on. We're going to play baseball this year. My commissioner told me that with the other 13 SEC head coaches, and I'm going to take him for his word, and we're going to figure it out, and it's going to look different, but it's going to be a challenge. But, you know, my point is, it cannot rise to the level of a problem, because if we see everything as problems, this world's going to destroy us right now. If we see things as challenges, we can overcome, we can attack them, defeat them, move on, look back and see where we did a job well done for going through some challenges.
So an article that's on the AuburnTigers.com website about Tanner Burns and a connection he made with a young patient at Children's Hospital in Birmingham. And I know that when Auburn has played UAB in Birmingham, typically you'll take some players and stop by. And I don't know if you'll be able to do that this year because of COVID, but you've done it in the past where you visited Children's with those players and let those players see what it's like for those families that are there. But you've shared with me that there is a personal connection with you and Robin and your family at Children's. And I was wanting to know if you might share that with the Auburn family about what that place has meant and means to this very day to so many folks, but has meant with you and your family as well.
That's why I think a coach can't take too much credit. You know, this deal with Tanner Burns and this amazing young man and family that he's connected with was their own experience, you know. And Tanner's the one that's fostered that relationship ever since we visited there 2 or 3 years ago. So I give him all the credit on that. But as coaches, we're supposed to provide opportunities, right? I'm supposed to help him with his fastball, his curveball, you know, give opportunities to give them a chance to, you know, shape their connections with people. When Anna, strike one, AKA strike one, was 9 months old, Robin was just sitting there and was like, what's wrong with Anna, something's not right. And I'm a father, just a guy. I'm not paying attention. I'm just wondering if it's time to change her diapers or feed them, you know. And the mom instinct sitting there looking, and she sees her twitching, basically having a seizure. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. Once she pointed it out, and I caught sense of it. So, you know, we go from there, sitting in our living room, to the next 3 days in Children's Hospital there in downtown Birmingham, and getting diagnosed with infantile spasms, talking about life expectancy. Our daughter taught us how to give her shots, and it seemed like every time the doctors would walk in, there'd be a few more doctors. You know, I think I'm 25 at the time, so I'm not equipped or prepared or ready to just, it seemed heavy at the time. 3 days later, we went home, and they told us, you know, we had to come back a couple more times, but for whatever reason, you know, she never exhibited any of that, those symptoms again, for whatever reason. And so we're thankful, but that scare of 3 days, we got to see and meet and figure out some more things. And hey, coaches do it all the time, and people go to Children's Hospital and do all these other things, and it is important. Just because of Tanner's story, connecting with his family for life, I hope. You know, I just always thought it was important to have that moment and for us to get to play baseball and young people the same age or younger, you know, fighting for their life. I just think it's good for a young person to see that, to sense that, and to take some energy from that and be thankful for what they got. But also, as they go on and they have their own families and they get to run their own show and there's not a coach standing over them telling them how they're supposed to live life, hopefully some of these things that check in, some of these things they think about, it's like, what should I be doing? Should I be, I remember us going to Children's Hospital, or I remember us going to Fort Benning. I remember reading to the school. Hopefully some of those things will trigger when they're running their own family that they'll act upon.
We could take another hour just to talk about this Auburn baseball team coming up, but that's for another time. We will do that as this season gets closer. On a personal note, I was thrilled the day it was announced that you were going to become the Auburn baseball head coach. I appreciate the friendship that you and I have. I appreciate the working relationship that you and I and your coaching staff and George Nunley with media relations has. I know Brad Law is looking forward to that, and I can't wait for a full season of Auburn baseball to start whenever and in whatever form that is for 2021.
And right back at you, the friendship. I just, everybody that listens to this, which I know it's a bunch and a bunch of people that love Auburn, happy new year. Just keep getting up and fighting and figuring out every day. That's what we should do. It's good. We don't look too far downfield right now. Everything is right in the moment. So stay in the moment, praying for safety and health for everybody out there. You know, our guys will get kicked up and we'll start practicing together. I miss our guys. It's been 60 days since our coaches and players have been together practicing. So we're excited. This is what we love to do. And, you know, a lot of time off, and I'm fresh. So I'm shaved, I'm ready to go, and I'm to a season together. But thanks for all you do, and thanks for having me today.
War Eagle.
War Eagle.
For Butch Thompson and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.